I am Chester Clark. Just to give you a little background, I finished Loma Linda in 1976 and moved back to my home conference of Arkansas in Louisiana, and been practicing there for 36 years. I was tired of studying, and I was going to start a practice in a big city of then 685, I think it was, and no, maybe 759. But anyway, I spent the first 6 months helping to build my practice, build the office. It was a scratch practice, and although there had been a dentist there for 35 years prior, had retired about 5 years before, and so there was a lot of people that hadn't seen a dentist for those many years. But we also felt the Lord led us there for a purpose, and the reason we found this place was because we were looking for a place that needed an Adventist witness. And so the first few years we started a church in our county seat, Arkadelphia, about 25 miles away. And then a few years later, the Lord led us to start an academy. So my wife and I started a little academy in our home that grew and grew. And we won't go into those stories at this point. But it has been thrilling to work with many young people from all over the United States and other countries as well. But my dental practice has been a lot of fun. And over the years, I have always been looking for things that would make life simpler for me and my treatment for patients more effective. And one of the things that was rather frustrating for years was periodontal disease. You know, we could encourage people to brush and floss and see some improvement, but it seemed like over time there was always a lot of regression, and if we didn't see them for a few years, we'd have to go back and do the deep scaling and deep cleaning and so on. And it wasn't until about probably 5 or 6 years ago that I learned about a program called Centers for Dental Medicine. And it's kind of a bridge between dentistry and medicine. And I wish that we had provided CME credit for this hour too, because there should be a lot of physicians here, because they will see some ways in which they can serve their patients better, I think, by the end of this lecture. But the thing that attracted me was that there was a way of actually measuring and defining the disease systemically as well as just periodontal probing and measuring the gum crevices. But let's go through these slides, and I'll have a few other comments and information, and then we will have some time for questions at the end. The oral systemic connections are so many. About 5 or 6 years ago, if you Googled oral systemic connection, you would come up with about 400,000 hits. And I'm sure it's more than that now, because the research has been so extensive, so many areas and people around the world doing research that show how things happening in the mouth are related to things happening in the body as well. And so if we ask the question, what increases the risk of diabetes by 50%, heart disease 72%, and certain cancers by 50%? And of course, the question is, the answer is periodontal disease. And let's go through those again. Let's see, the other way. 50% diabetes, heart disease 72%, and some cancers by 50%. Those are some significant percentages, aren't they? If your hygiene program were to help me lose weight, lower my blood pressure, lower my CPR, eliminate medications, lower HbA1c or cholesterol and triglycerides to normal, I would be your raving fan. And this is the opportunities that we have right now, in treating periodontal disease, we can do every one of these things in helping people achieve a healthier state. A growing body of evidence indicates that we, as dentists, can help people in all of these areas of their health parameters. Medical history reports that Esarhaddon, king of Assyria, was constantly plagued with rheumatism and did not respond to any conventional method of treatment. His doctor was quoted as saying, "On the order of my lord and king to tell him the true diagnosis, I have told him the diagnosis in one word, inflammation. He whose head, hands, and feet are inflamed suffers this trouble due to the condition of his teeth. The teeth of my lord have to be removed. For this reason, the internal organs are inflamed." So not only a lot of current research and information, but it looks like it goes back quite a few centuries. What was that, 660 AD, something like that? And about 100 years ago, 90-some years ago now, Charles Mayo, who noted over 90 years ago, when this actually is longer than that, that people who keep their teeth live an average of 10 years longer than people who do not. And this was just an observation. I don't know if it was based on scientific study or not, but at least this prominent physician recognized this. And about 14 years ago, there was a special report by the Department of Health and Human Services. Every year they publish a big, thick volume dealing, focusing on one area of health. And the year 2000, it was oral health. And Donna Shalala said in her address back then, or the introduction of this book, "The terms oral health and general health should not be interpreted as separate entities. Oral health is integral to general health. This report provides important reminders that oral health means more than healthy teeth and that you cannot be healthy without oral health." And so their partnership against inflammatory disease, that's actually what we're talking about. The periodontal disease is, much of it is inflammation of the gums, and of course, and we'll talk about what the cause of that is. But inflammation, as many of you physicians probably know better than the dentists even, is related to almost every condition in the human body. And this shows how many areas. At the top, we see cardiovascular diseases, a list there, diabetic complications, chronic inflammatory diseases, bone, muscular, and skeletal diseases, cancer of a number of kinds, and metabolic disorder complications, and neurological disorder. And I think that probably covers just about the whole gamut, except maybe gynecological disorders. But anyway, that is rather all-encompassing. Can you all hear me okay in the back? Do I need to talk louder?
No, you're fine.
Okay. Let me get out of the way here so y'all, I'm not standing in front of the screen here. In a wellness letter from several years ago, this comment was made. Acute inflammation is characterized by the redness, heat, swelling, and pain that is the immune system's normal response to infection or injury. Immune cells congregate at the site so that they can overwhelm and dispose of infectious organisms or debris from injury. Thus, healing takes place. But there's another kind of inflammation, low-grade, chronic, and systemic. It's been getting a lot of attention lately. And then just a little bit here in the next paragraph, it says, "The reason you hear so much about this kind of inflammation is that it may underlie a kind of unified field explanation of disease. That is, some researchers now believe that low-grade inflammation is associated with everything from heart disease and diabetes to Alzheimer's and arthritis, and may even be the cause of most chronic diseases. This is not an entirely new theory. Inflammation was implicated in cancer many years ago." And Aetna, prominent insurance agency did a study of 145,000 of their members, they're insured, and both dental and medical, with both dental and medical coverage, showed that periodontal care reduces the cost of medical care. And treating periodontal disease lowers Aetna's cost of treating members with diabetes, coronary artery disease, and cerebrovascular disease. Of course, with the changes in insurance, who knows what they will be covering in the next year or two. But another insurance company, Cigna, will pay 100% of out-of-pocket perio expense for members with diabetes, cardiovascular disease, IADR, an IADR study shows lower medical costs for diabetes and cardiovascular patients when treated for periodontal disease. So another insurance who found basically the same thing as Aetna. And the University of Michigan researchers found that individuals who received regular non-surgical periodontal care during the term of the study also demonstrated lower diabetes-related medical care costs of more than 10% per year, more than 20% lower and lower annual medical costs for treatment related to cardiovascular disease in individuals with both diabetes and heart disease, more than 30% lower annual medical costs for kidney disease treatment for individuals with diabetes and kidney disease, and 40% lower medical care costs for treatment related to congestive heart failure. Wouldn't that lead you to think that there is a connection between disease in the mouth, or periodontal disease, and heart disease, diabetes? Certainly, there is strong evidence. CRP creatinine reactive protein. Took me a while to get that out, but that's a test that many physicians are realizing is as predictive of heart disease as cholesterol anymore. They have a high CRP. It's assumed there's some inflammation going on somewhere in the body. And interestingly enough, patients with periodontal disease often have, almost always have, high CRP. And that CRP goes down when treatment is successful. And this, for some of you dentists, if you were like me a few years ago, you weren't familiar with CRP, but if the value is one or less, then that there's very little risk. That's good. Most of you probably have a CRP of one or less. If it's one to three, then it's a moderate risk, and then above three, it gets more serious and predictive of heart disease. Okay. Periodontal disease can increase CRP. Recent research demonstrates the link between gum disease and systemic inflammation. Well, let's go back to that. Periodontal therapy lowers levels of heart disease inflammation markers. Treating periodontal disease with scaling and root planing combined with a topical antibiotic gel can significantly lower the levels of two inflammatory proteins associated with heightened risk of heart disease. And this was from a 2004 report in the ADA News. Blood drawn from 102 subjects with periodontal disease showed elevated levels of both C-reactive protein and fibrinogen, proteins associated with increased risk for heart disease and blood clotting. Periodontal disease and diabetes. Let's see, glycated hemoglobin is a test that probably some of the physicians could explain better than I can. But when you do a blood glucose test, is there a 12-hour or fasting blood glucose that records the amount of glucose in the blood during that period of time? But the glycated hemoglobin A1C test shows the amount of glucose that's been in the blood for 2 or 3 months. So it
3 months.
3 months. Okay.
It's a lack of your red blood cells. So 90 days is a lack of red blood cells. So it's a
I see. So it has been glycated with a red blood cell and been there for 90 days. And a high, well, the average glucose, well, like you said, 2 to 3 months. And the extra glucose links up with the hemoglobin. So if you're on a high sugar diet and your body's not able to handle all of the sugar in the blood, some of it gets glycated with hemoglobin. The more glucose in the blood, the more hemoglobin gets glycated. The normal is 5%, and a diabetic is usually around 7%. And it's increased by periodontal pathogens in the bloodstream. It's reduced by periodontal treatment. In this study from January of 2005, it says those with severe periodontal disease had a 28.4% death rate, and those with no or little periodontal disease had a 3.7% death rate. So it sounds like diabetes is a serious condition, isn't it? Well, in treating the periodontal disease, one of the challenges we have as dentists is convincing people that they have a disease when they have no pain and sometimes no bleeding. And they come into the dentist and they thought it was just last year they saw you, but it was 3 or 4 years ago. And when you show them or tell them about these swollen and puffy looking gums and maybe a little exudate here and there, and ask them about their brushing habits, sometimes people get a little offended with you're suggesting they have a disease process going on in their body that there's no symptoms. Why? Nothing hurts. And so what can we do to help show them and convince them that maybe there is something going on? And we'll talk a little more about this Centers for Dental Medicine process, but part of the process is leading people through this discovery phase to an interest level, to a concerned level, to a committed level, and realizing that they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to spend a little money. They're going to have some time with the dentist or the hygienist to get this disease process taken care of. And one of the first tools that we use is tool called the Florida probe. The dentists here, how many of you have are familiar with the Florida probe? Okay, well, it looks like three of us are. It's a means for helping the patients co-discover their disease process. And as you know, seeing is believing. It connects with your computer system. It is, instead of relying on a notched stick, as we sometimes call the periodontal probe, for measuring, if three hygienists measured your gums on the same day, the readings would be quite different because the pressure that they're putting into that gum crevice would be different, and they would show different readings. But the Florida probe is a computer-aided device that standardizes. If 10 people did, probes your gum tissue, they would come up with exactly the same thing every time. And so it also is set up where when the hygienist is going around the patient's mouth, they can see on a screen right above their face the results. And when the number is over three, indicating 3 millimeters of their pockets, there's a little boop, a little sound that indicates there's a problem there. And if there's a bleeding spot, then she'll push a different button on the foot control and it'll show a bleeding spot by that tooth. And so it is really not only a scientific way of determining the level of disease, but it all is also a means of educating the patient in the process. This is what the probe looks like that is used. And the patients discover the state of their health with you visually, audibly, and through this shared experience. And all in all, if a patient has a full mouth set of teeth, there would be a total of 192 points of data that would be recorded for on that probing. And just by comparison of different means of treatment, on the left shows the depth of the periodontal pockets and the total number of sites here on the first row is 3.0 to 3.9, and total number of sites is 45. And before, the average site depth was 3.37. After treatment, average site depth was 2.04. And then, well, the percentage of sites that were reduced was 93.3, and so on. And you can see each, as the pockets get deeper there, the the percentage, well, apparently there weren't any above six millimeters, but it is a very effective way of seeing those pocket depths heal and restored. Now, just a comparison of different types of treatment. The first column is the CDM treatment, the row rather. The next one here is SRP, scalene root planing plus Arrestin, and then SRP only. With in the final percentage down here, with the CDM treatment, we see 82.5% reduction to 3 millimeters, which is 95%. With SRP and Arrestin, it was only 51%, and with just SRP, it was 42.2%. And so this treatment is extremely effective in seeing that tissue heal. And just there, it's kind of a two-point program. One of the key parts of it is the laser treatment. Without the laser treatment, this system would not work like it does, would not be so successful. But it's not just the lasers. The patients have to own the disease, and they have to have a commitment to working on their home care as well. And at the end, I'll show some of the different products that the patients use, as well as the different tools that the dentist is using. Yes, question.
Is the CDM system anything like Perio Protect?
No, I don't think so. I don't know too much about PerioProtect.
Tray medication.
Oh, yes, yes. I think there is, I have seen some of the effectiveness, but it's not as thorough and doesn't seem to be as long-lasting as this system is. But one of the things that this program does is convince the patient that periodontal disease is not a disease caused by poor brushing, or it's not a disease caused by lack of flossing. Periodontal disease is a bacterial disease. Take away the bacteria, the disease goes away, whether there's brushing or not. But gum disease is caused by the bacteria. And when we can show them the actual bacteria, and I'll show you in just a little bit how we do that, it's impressive, and they know that they've got to do that brushing. They've got to use the hydrofloss or the closest mouthwash on a consistent basis. But anyway, this we'll go on and see some of the rest of it. Another test that we use, this is done right at chairside. It's a it's called the Banazyme test. We abbreviate that, just call it the Bana test. Has a little reagent strip here. And we put a couple of, down here at the bottom, we take the periodontal probe or explorer, go into the deep gum crevice, deepest gum crevice, or the one that looks the worst, and put a couple little spots of that plaque down here, and then a couple drops of sterile water, I believe it is, up here. And then you fold that over against each other, and you slip it in one of these little openings here, and that incubates it for about 5 minutes. And while we're doing that, we hand the patient one of these brochures and ask them to start looking through that. And that these, I've got several samples that you can take of these afterwards that really help to educate the patient as well as to what we're doing and the complex disease process going on here and what they need to do. And then we come back, and if, you know, unless it's a perfectly clean mouth, there's almost always a little bit of blue up here on this this pad here, two little splotches of blue, and that indicates that they have the three most pathological bacteria in those gum crevices. And so what we're doing is just gradually building their interest in and understanding and showing them. And then another thing that is done at this first appointment is we do a very thorough health history of themselves, of the patient, and a family history. We ask them some questions about their mother and their father, and they go through and check if their mother had heart disease, if their mother had diabetes or father, and stroke or cancer. And then when we come back and show them some of this and some of the other tests, they, you know, we can correlate it very closely with what we see in their mouth and share with them that they have a high risk of also having heart disease if their father died of heart disease, say, and if they had gum disease. Oh, yes, my dad lost his teeth, you know, when he was 45 or something like that. So all of this plays into the parameters of their disease as well. Okay, this is just explaining what I just did, placing distilled water on it and then putting it in the test. Another test that we do is periodontitis susceptibility. And research shows that 32%, of the population in the United States have interleukin B. I think now these slides are a few years old. I think they're using interleukin 6 instead of interleukin 1, which is maybe even a little more accurate. Determines inflammatory response to stimulus, and 32% of the population is susceptible to excess inflammation. What this means is if this test is positive, then you have a greater risk of gum disease than the other 68% of the population. And that means that we're going to have to be a little more aggressive and in treating it and work a little harder perhaps in returning your gums to normal. They have a 6 to 7 times greater risk of periodontal disease. It's increased risk of failed implants, increased risk of arthritis and heart disease as well, and increased complications of diabetes, and also risk of lung cancer, especially in smokers. Well, this is what the MyPerioID result looks like, and we've had a fair number of these. They're not all positive, but this says ILA1 genotype, and up here the result is positive. So this is just a generic thing, but later on I'll show you some actual patients which just has their name at the top and also showing it's positive and information for them to understand a little more about the test. And then there's a periodontal pathogen test, and this is a test where it's a very simple thing done by oral DNA, and you just have them take the liquid that's in this little vial and swish it around in their mouth for 30 seconds and spit it back into the cup and put a lid on it and send it in, and they do the test, and they find out what the patient's, how many of the 11 most common pathogens in the mouth are in their gums. Periodontal disease is a bacterial infection, as we've said. It requires understanding of the cause. Existing damage does not predict future risk. It allows patient to understand their specific situation. And also, frequently we need to confer with their MDs to help them understand the infection and that it's a systemic disease, not just a problem in those gum pockets, and defines the need for specific systemic antibiotics at times. Okay, this is, again, kind of a generic result of those 11 pathogens, and I don't know if I can read all the names, Tannerella, Forsythia, Treponema, Tacola, and nine others there. The printing is a little small, but you can see that some of these were present, some of them were above the threshold, some of them were below the threshold down here. But any time the level of those bacteria are above the threshold, then it's serious. And if it is, well, a little later I'll show you our actual report that is going to be a little bit easier to see, a little larger print. But CDM results, and these are some that we saw in our patient. This is the Florida probe printout, and I don't know if you can see in the back there how many these red lines there are. Oh, sorry, I was pushing the wrong button. This was a patient that showed up sporadically for appointments. We were amazed at the results we got with as infrequent as he kept his appointments. But you can see up here is about a 5 or 6 millimeter pocket, and looks like the deepest one was a 9 millimeter pocket here. I don't think that fully resolved, but the follow-up here was looks like about a 7. It healed on one side, but not the other. But you see a whole lot less pocketing there than previously. Another patient also had a 9 millimeter pocket, and amazingly, her whole mouth healed up to pretty much. She had some pocketing when we finished the treatment right here, which has since been resolved. We used the laser a few more times, and that is cured. This is one of my assistants, actually, who grew up in El Salvador. But anyway, her mouth is perfectly healthy today, no pocketing at all, and no gum surgery. And a mostly painless procedure of taking care of her gums, eliminating the bacteria in her mouth, and restoring healthy situation. Another patient, this lady is a lab technologist. So when we talk about bacteria, you know, she knew probably more about it than we did. And she really was, you know, got excited and followed through probably as well or better than any patient we've had with her gum treatment. And she went from that condition to that condition, not a single pocket in her mouth. And interesting thing, when patients have gone through this process, they become faithful patients. I think almost every patient that we have cured of disease like this still comes in every 6 months. In fact, the hygienist that I worked with for four and a half years, after we started this program last December, told me her husband wasn't happy and they were moving back to Washington State. She'd be leaving the end of the month, and that was a real blow to me, because since then we've had to find another hygienist and get her trained. And well, actually, we're in the process right now of getting the whole staff trained again in the CDM program. And there's some some newer things now that we didn't have then. But nonetheless, she was excellent in communicating what needed to be done with treating this disease. This was another patient that didn't show up real well for his appointments, but he had a very good improvement, still some pocketing there. And this lady lives about 90 miles away, and she had an excellent result as well. I see just a few 3 and 4 millimeter pockets there. But in fact, this is her periopath pathogen test that she had to start with. She actually had, looks like, 1, 2, 3, 4 bacteria above the threshold. And then, well, this is a little closer. Yeah, the TF here, Tanerella forsythia, and ENU bacterium nodatum, and few others there. anyway, it on the second page of this report, it tells about each one of these bacteria and whether they are in the high risk. If they're high risk pathogens, they're more we're more concerned with them than in the moderate and the low risk pathogens. And another, and this was the follow up. She did have a real high one here, TF, still some there, but not, it's below threshold. These two are unchanged. They are in the moderate range, but we're seeing this lady every 6 months and her mouth continues to be clean and no pocketing each time we check with the Florida probe. And this is her My Perio ID, in other words, the test to see if she's among the 32% that have a higher risk of periodontal disease, of inflammation, and she did come out as positive with that. And then her CRP A1C test, I couldn't find the report of her initial one, but her initial readings were on HGA1C was 7.8. The follow-up was 6.6, still a little bit over, higher than what we'd like to see. You know, if she didn't have such a clean mouth and I knew she had a pretty healthy diet, I might consider her pre-diabetic, but probably it's not a problem. Her 1.2 CRP is unchanged before and after her treatment. And for you dentists who may be concerned about drawing blood for this, it's not a real invasive procedure. It's just a little device. You just pop their finger and a little tiny pipette, and you get to draw a little blood out. So it's something your hygienist can be trained to do if you don't want to do it. In fact, I think I've only done it once or twice, and hygienist seems to enjoy it. So anyway, that little bit of blood will give you both of these readings, the A1C and the CRP. Okay, just a couple of, and I'm sorry I didn't have more slides to before and after. I'm not as high tech as a previous speaker here, Rick, and I don't seem to find time to take pictures, but this was a young lady, obviously had some gum issues with some cleaning and laser, I think maybe just one laser treatment for her. This is what her gums look like a few weeks later. But, and that's both of them. Okay, now just a brief listing of the tools for treating periodontal disease for the patients. We have the hydrofloss unit, which is kind of like the water pick, but seems to work better with periodontal disease. And then there's a Hydra brush. This was what the company came out with first. It's really a unique little brushing device. It has these two brushes that work back and forth like this, and you put it in your mouth while it's moving back and forth and kind of bite into it, and it brushes all six surfaces of your teeth, upper and lower, at the same time. Posterior, you just kind of bring it around like this. And anyway, those are kind of nifty little tools, but they didn't seem to hold up, and after a year, people were bringing them back and rather frustrated with them. And so now we recommend the Sonicare. It seems to be a much more a tool that will last longer and work just as good. And then there's a couple of products. The first thing, and one of the most important things, is Closest mouthwash, stabilized chlorine dioxide, and that eliminates a lot of the bacteria. It doesn't get into the gum crevice, and that's why we need to irrigate and use the laser treatment deep scaling frequently. And then they have two supplements. One is Physician's Periodontal Formula, which is and I don't have the slides right here in this presentation that show all the minerals and vitamins that are in that, but each of them are designed to help in inflammation and reduce inflammation and heal the gums. And then Osteogenesis Formula is especially for post-menopausal women that may have some bone issues as well, and that seems to really help in clearing up their gum disease. Doctor's tools, as we mentioned, with the health history and the family history is where we start. And I see I didn't include the BANA test here in this list, but that's another thing that we do on the first appointment, the Banna test and the Florida probe. And then I also have, and this wasn't actually a part of the CDM program, but a few years before I learned about this, I purchased a phase contrast microscope, and we'll take a little smear of the bacterial plaque and put that on a slide and put it on the microscope, which has a video camera on the top of it, and so they can see on the monitor in within just a few minutes millions of bacteria. And of course, with more advanced disease, you see, get sometimes see some amoeba and a lot of other things. And this is one of the most motivating tools you could ever purchase. When people see their own bugs, they say, we've got to do something about that. And they want to do it right now, you know. They can't get those bugs out of their mouth fast enough. But that's another tool that I found very helpful. And then we often take intraoral pictures of their their condition as well. And the the laser that we use is the a diode laser, and there's almost all the lasers on the market today are effective with soft tissue, have a setting for soft tissue. You know, I've seen some of the hard tissue lasers, and they look really interesting, and I'd like to go into that someday, but right now for and when I bought this laser, it was like $13,000. Now, with a lot of cheaper lasers coming out, that the price of that same little laser is about $8,000. But you can buy a nice soft tissue laser now for $3,000 to $5,000.
So it's $2,400.
What's that?
Denmat Solo,
yes, $2,400. So it's there's really not much excuse for not using lasers in dentistry today, because they are so fantastic in not only killing the bacteria, and there's two procedures that we use or do with the laser. One is called laser bacterial reduction, LBR, and it's a simple procedure. We just, without activating the tip, we just go around each gum crevice, kind of painting with a little tiny probe into the sulcus there, and that actually kills the bacteria, and flushing it out afterwards. I've got a few patients, I guess it feels so good, they want that, you know, with their regular cleaning every time. And then in pockets that are deeper than 3 millimeters, we do laser-assisted periodontal therapy, which is the same tip, but it's activated, which means it has some a little more power to it. And we'll just go into this gum sulcus and kind of paint it back and forth. And actually, the last, this, our new hygienist, we just had certified for laser use a few months ago. And the lady who is a trainer for the Academy of Laser Dentistry actually came to our office and spent a day with us. And she taught us a different procedure that is even more effective and simpler to use. And I was amazed, you know, I kind of bungled up, bungled around with it a little bit, trying to figure out how she was showing us. But my hygienist, just the first time, just like she'd done it for 20 years, went in and picked up the technique. But it's even more effective and easier than what I was taught about 5 years ago. But and this is an 810 nanometer. There's other lasers that have different wavelengths, but many, quite a few products, soft tissue lasers. And of course, we have to have hygiene services for thorough sulcular debridement. You've got to remove the tartar buildup on the root surface. And it appears once you've killed that bacteria, you have a clean root surface, and the laser is actually stimulating the body's healing response as well. And we see reattachment of the gum tissue to the tooth. And that's how, without surgery, a 6, 7, or 8 millimeter pocket can heal to 3 millimeters and remain healthy for years afterwards. Then the other tools, as we've mentioned, the blood test for CRP and A1C, and the oral DNA test for myperio pathogens and the myperio ID. And
what's the post-op on the laser treatment you're doing? What's the post-op on that?
As far as pain?
As far as pain and, you know, like, would they have to be like on a soft diet for a certain period of time, you know?
No, we don't recommend anything, and patients usually have no pain afterwards, no pain meds required, or it's, the laser is so...
You put them on a 3 month after that, or you bring them back in 6 months?
Well, actually, the system that we were taught, and I'm learning there may be some advances that will make it even more simple than this, but if a person had a 6 millimeter pocket with each treatment of the laser-assisted periodontal therapy, the pocket reduced by 1 millimeter. So we would see them back again in 2 or 3 weeks, do another treatment, and it would heal up another millimeter. So it would take 3 treatments of a 6 millimeter pocket to see a 3 millimeter result. And so what we do is we have 3 different treatment plans, one for mild disease, and I think it's a certain number of 4 millimeter pockets would be a 3 month program and would have their disease condition pretty well cleared up. The next was for a certain number of 4 or 5 millimeter pockets, and that would be a 6 month program. And a advanced case would be a 12 month program. We wouldn't see them every 2 weeks during that time. We would do a concentrated time every 2 or 3 weeks, and then we would see them every 3 months until the year's up. And then we would take the follow-up oral DNA test to see if, you know, what their pathogens look like. And usually their mouths were looking so much better. The people, every one of them said they were feeling better, had more energy, and the CDM program has a follow-up program, which we really haven't taken the time to do much with, but it leads people into a wellness-type program. And, of course, their picture of wellness is a little different than ours. We'd like to see them move into a spiritual wellness program as well, and we do see some interest with that. Just a few weeks ago, I had a patient ask me if there was an Adventist church in her community, who a lady we'd seen for a number of years. And anyway, that's our goal, of course. These are a couple of resources. The Academy of Laser Dentistry is the largest group of promoting lasers. They have an annual meeting, I think, in February, end of February. It's in Arizona this year. But they have a very well-developed system for accreditation and for learning how to do lasers. You do a one-hour online course and get some of the basics, and then if you attend their meeting in 2 days, you'll be certified for the next level. And then if you wanted to teach it or something like that, then you go on and go to the next level of certification. And anyway, this is the website for the Centers for Dental Medicine. And how this can benefit physicians is that if physicians would just look in people's mouths and look at their gum tissue, and if they see inflammation, they'll likely see correlation with some of their health symptoms as well. And there's something over 100, 120, I think, CDM offices around the country. And if you go to this website, you can find, check and see if there's a CDM office, a dentist in your area that is following this protocol in treating their patients for periodontal disease. And you can refer your patients there, or you can have patients contact CDM themselves and maybe they can encourage, find a dentist in their area that would learn this system. But
well, you can learn. Or we can learn.
Yes, right. And you might, you know, just attending the Academy of Laser Dentistry's conference and being certified will give you a lot of the tools. And I think it's like $49,000 or something, this CDM program, to get the training where they send someone to your office for 2 or 3 days. And and that includes the Florida probe and some of these other, and the laser and a lot of the other equipment that you would need for it. Okay, I guess I better look at the time here. I guess we're in pretty good shape. Let me just close with this quotation that since I've been doing a lot of different things outside the scope of my dental training, some people wonder how sane I am, but I thought this was an interesting quote from a famous person back in the late 1800s. He said, "All men live in assumptions, traditions, current opinions, etc., which are in the third or fourth derivative from the truth. No man ever penetrates behind these to get at the truth in more than one domain, namely that which he makes his specialty. He is always vexed to hear the uninitiated talk about his specialty, because they treat it always from the standpoint of the third or fourth derivatives. But he does the same with their specialties. Hence, a man who goes remorselessly to the bottom of things will never have wide influence and will appear to be an extremist." So, you know, when you step out of the bounds of the ways you were taught in treating patients, you might be considered an extremist. But I think there's a lot of satisfaction in going to the bottom of things and learning to treat disease in a way that is measurable, definitive, and people feel better and are better able to respond to our witnessing and the influence of the Holy Spirit as well. Any questions? This is my backyard, by the way. No, not really.
Do you find that laser treatment with chlorhexidine or anything like that too, like on the cases that are more severe? Is there any
The chlorhexidine is a good antimicrobial. It tends to have some brown staining. People like this closest because it tends to bleach the teeth a little bit. And I mean, it's not, they're not going to use it the rest of their life, but you don't have the problem with the brown stains.
Halitosis is one of the best remedies for halitosis.
Halitosis, mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's actually killing those bacteria. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You have to use anesthetic in some of those areas too when you're doing that laser?
Yes, with the LAPT, we do have to use some anesthetic. Although this technique that the trainer just a few months ago taught us, I was amazed how much she was able to do without anesthesia. We have a little EpiPen. I don't know if any of you have ever used that, a little blunt tip that you can squeeze an anesthetic gel-type solution into the sulcus, and that provides adequate anesthesia for most of the laser treatment without having to do a block. But people that don't want to feel anything or know what's going on, you know, they will, just for your own benefit, you might want to do a block. But, okay, any other questions? We are actually 10 minutes early, so.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.